Welcome everyone to this session where I'm really happy to be talking with James Maskell. Firstly, James, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me, Alex.
My pleasure. I think this is a really important topic that we're going to be getting into. We're going to be talking about the importance and the power of community and groups in supporting people's transformational and healing processes. And just to give people a bit of James's background, on a mission to flatten the curve of healthcare costs, James Maskell has spent the past decade innovating at the cross-section of functional medicine and community. To that end, he created the Functional Forum, the world's largest integrative medicine conference with record-setting participation online and growing physician communities around the world. His organization and best-selling book of the same name, Evolution of Medicine, prepares health professionals for this new era of personalized participatory medicine. His new project, Find Functional, makes functional medicine affordable and accessible for all. He is an in-demand speaker and impresario being featured on TEDMED, HuffPost Life, and TEDx, as well as lecturing internationally. His latest book is The Community Cure, and he lives in Sacramento, California, with his wife and daughter. It's also his daughter's birthday today on the time of recording. So thank you, James, for making the time. Appreciate it.
Great to be here with you, Alex. Thank you.
So in your new book, which I was reading through earlier, and I think is a really important contribution to often a missed piece in terms of people's healing paths, you talk about this concept of the loneliness epidemic. And that can have an enormous impact on people's health and well-being, and indeed on trauma. Can you say a little bit about what you mean by that?
Yeah, this sort of came to me because I saw two gaping holes all of a sudden. Like one, in the functional medicine world that I've been part of for 10 years, we think of ourselves as the root cause practitioners. Like if you ask people, what is functional medicine? It's the root cause doctors or the root cause concept. And also that functional medicine was sort of elitist, was not really available to everyone because it was paid for in cash and not everyone could afford it. And I was sitting in a lecture where I started to understand that loneliness was the biggest driver of all cause mortality, like the biggest root cause. And yet here was functional medicine sort of doing it one-on-one and not really, you know, doing it kind of the same as conventional medicine and not really dealing with the root cause of the root cause. And, you know, as I got into that, I started to research it and understand it. And I saw, you know, loneliness, social isolation, that leads to loneliness, right? You can be isolated and not lonely if you accept your isolation, but ultimately for many reasons, to do with the way that culture is today, it's very easy to be lonely, and especially in times when everyone's locked down in their homes, like loneliness is an all-time high. And it leads to all kinds of like physiological changes in the body. Like it affects your immune system. It affects, you know, the stress response, like all of these things that drive pathology. And so I just became super interested in it, like really trying to understand, you know, what is it about community that is super important? How did community disappear over the last, you know, 400, but really like 100 years, like and the acceleration to a point where now, you know, we're all like helplessly independent, right? Where, you know, we don't know our neighbors, but we're sort of dependent on, you know, workers three countries away to send us stuff. And, you know, that just got me really interested in this topic. And at the same time, what I started to see is that those practitioners in functional medicine that started doing functional medicine in groups, right, to really thinking that what if we were to reestablish community? What if we were to like bring people together and create sort of like a container for people, not only to build new friendships with people who kind of had a similar life situation to them, but also now create a container for actually doing the healthy behaviors that everyone knows they have to do to maintain good health over a lifetime. There was sort of like this magic recipe that was like making functional medicine affordable, accessible, and all these things. And I don't know why it was that much of a surprise, honestly, given that we've known, like with alcoholics, you know, for 80 years, we've known that alcoholics need accountability and support, not drugs and doctors. And I guess the sort of moment of clarity that I had was that lifestyle-driven chronic disease is a lot more similar to alcoholism than it is to trauma. Or when I say trauma, I mean like getting hit by a car, or, you know, than an infection. And so we should, you know, we should be treating it in a trauma-informed way.
And I think it's also particularly interesting, like, you think about the term of loneliness. And I think a lot of people would say, I'm not lonely. I'm constantly connected to the whole world the whole time. Like, they feel overstimulated by their connections. But of course, we could be getting endless emails and WhatsApps and all the time on social media or whatever, and still feel lonely and not ultimately feel connected.
You know, 100%, Alex. And I think that's such a good point. And there really is a difference between, you know, online connection and real in-person connection. And I think that, not only is that like documented in scientific literature, but I think you just feel it. You just know it. There's kind of like a body knowing of what connection looks like. And I think it's possible to maintain real relationships that have been built on something solid, you know, in the real world, but it's very difficult to create, you know, new relationships. It's not impossible, but it's definitely harder to create new relationships through the digital media.
And you mentioned the kind of healing together in groups. And of course, as you mentioned, AA is a really, really good example of that. I was quite struck though in reading your book earlier, the some of the research around outcomes in pregnancy and certain areas where one wouldn't necessarily think that there would be a change in terms of actual medical outcome. I thought that was quite striking.
Yeah. So, I mean, as I started getting into the book, like, the thing that triggered me to write the book was I went to the Cleveland Clinic Center for Functional Medicine, right? So this is like the most exciting functional medicine project on the planet, because a big, credible, mainstream organization has started to do functional medicine. And it's exciting in and of itself. Like, last year in October, there was a paper in JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association, validating functional medicine. That data came from the Cleveland Clinic. So this is like the moment where functional medicine is being like seen to be better than family medicine, than drug-based therapy for a range of chronic diseases. So when I went to the Cleveland Clinic in 2018 and I drove there, I was like on a bus tour and I showed up with the cameras and I was like, let's see what you guys are doing. So in that, what they do at the Cleveland Clinic, in order to see one of the doctors like Mark Hyman or one of the top functional medicine doctors that work there, you have to go through a 10-week, 2-hour-a-week group training run by health coaches, dietitians, and physician's assistants. And through that time, through that 10 weeks, you basically learn how to keep yourself healthy, right? And you don't just learn, you actually do it. So, you know, you learn about meditation, you learn about cooking healthy meals, you learn how to read your own labs, like, you sort of become self-efficacious. And, you know, what I heard from interviewing the people who were doing it was that, yes, some people, you know, become fast friends with 2 or 3 people in the group on the first appointment, right? Some people it takes till week 5 and some people by week 9. But by the end of it, you know, this is a really solid community of people who are all interested in reversing their chronic disease together. They have autoimmune disease groups and diabetes groups and all those kind of things. So ultimately, you know, what I started to see was that, okay, this is how they're doing at the Cleveland Clinic. And those results are spectacular. Like, half the people who go through those groups never need to see the doctor at the end of it because they're just better. And this is not just like little things. Like, imagine the kind of people who have been referred to the Cleveland Clinic Center for Functional Medicine. It's basically all the people that the rest of the Cleveland Clinic couldn't get better, right? So these are tough cases. So that really got me inspired. And then I was like, okay, it makes a lot of sense for lifestyle-driven chronic disease, right? Because we're all about behavior change. We're all about understanding the root cause. So, you know, that makes sense. And then when I started to like look this up and see, okay, what's the biggest group visit happening in medicine today? I came across this thing called centering pregnancy, and that's what you're referring to. So centering pregnancy, again, like all of these groups start as a resource constraint, right? Someone realizes, hey, I don't have enough time to like see 20 pregnant women, I'm going to see them all for 5 minutes each this afternoon. Like, why don't we just put them all in a room together and see what happens for 2 hours rather than 5 minutes each, 20, you know, 20 times. And guess what? Like, you know, evolutionarily, right, pregnant women were never left alone in their own home, not talking to other elders, other women or otherwise. Like, if you were out of the tribe, right? That was actually like a death sentence, right? Being in the tribe is where you need to be. And so, you know, you have this experience with loneliness today where people are going through pregnancy alone. They don't live in the same house as their parents. They don't have the intergenerational wisdom coming down to them, or that's kind of like maybe only happening on FaceTime because you don't live where you used to live. And this is like new for society. And so they started doing centering pregnancy, bringing women who had the same, they didn't have, you know, pregnancy is not a disease, right? This is just a stage of life. But by putting these women into a group, they were able to reduce preterm pregnancy by 35% all across the board, across all the studies, everything, which is a big deal for like deaths and outcomes and all those kind of things. And the biggest impact happened in the states with the worst outcome. Like in America, you know, have like some states have outcomes similar to the rest of Europe, like good maternal outcomes. And some states like Mississippi and South Carolina have like atrocious infant mortality rates similar to like, you know, sub-Saharan Africa. And so what this simple thing has done, which is basically to put these women in a group together and have them share, you know, just share with each other their experience, has changed, has flattened this disparity pretty significantly. And so, you know, there's a thing where like pregnancy and preterm birth and those kind of things, these are not thought about as chronic diseases. These are like acute, but ultimately you can change the outcome significantly because guess what? People feel a sense of safety in community that reduces the stress response. You know, I think it's, you know, to do with the topic of this conference, it's pretty traumatic to, you know, to be in the birth process alone. And by reducing that trauma, by putting people in a group together and having them to be able to like talk through their choices, talk through what it's like to hear from other people, community sends a signal of safety more effectively than any other intervention.
I think that's a really, really powerful point. And I really like the way you're tying it up with the mechanism or part of the mechanism of how it's impacting people. And I, you know, it's interesting. The organization that I founded, the Optimum Health Clinic, which does a lot of work with fatigue related conditions. It's interesting what you were saying around it's often driven by a constraint, for example, a financial constraint or a time constraint. Because about 15 years ago, we started running group workshops, partly because we just couldn't see all the people that wanted to come in person. And I remember thinking at the time, my God, no one's going to want to talk about their experience. I remember when I'd had chronic fatigue, I hated the idea of being in a group. And I was really nervous about whether this was going to work. And it was phenomenally effective that people made much more progress, it seemed, in group programs than they would sometimes do one-on-one because of that support and that sense that, as you said, I'm not going through this alone.
Well, I want to talk into that specifically, Alex, because I think a lot of people have this reality is true for almost across the board, is that most people think they don't want to be in a group until they try it and then they realize it's awesome. So why is that? Like, where does that come from? And ultimately, what I started to realize is that, you know, our early experience of being in community can often be traumatic. Right? Some people don't get on well with their family, like a lot of people, like, you know,
most people,
all those things where it's like, yeah, where it's like, hey, you think you're all zenned out, go and spend a week with your family and see what happens, right? So that's kind of like a semi-traumatic experience right from the beginning. Then think about like high school and being in the like high school locker room, or, you know, everyone has a traumatic experience from age 13 to 16. I mean, if you coast through those years, you're in a vast minority. And so that's traumatic. And then imagine like your first job where you show up and you're like, you know, the lowest on the totem pole, whatever job you have, like that could be traumatic. So no wonder people are like, I don't want to be in any group. Like, you know, I don't need to be in a group. I'm certainly not going to be vulnerable. I'm certainly not going to do that because every time I've been vulnerable in any of those situations, I get smacked down by whoever is there, the school bully, the abusive father, or the like my boss. And so people don't want that. And ultimately what happens is, you know, these groups that we're talking about, your group at the Optimum Clinic, the group at the Cleveland Clinic, like, you know, centering pregnancy, all of these group models, this is not that, right? This is groups of people with going through similar life experiences who are looking to find a community of people to support them in hitting whatever their goals are. And ultimately what we found is that, you know, I'll tell you an amazing story. So in the book, one of the stories I shared, as a nurse practitioner that we work with, and a woman came in wanting to get her anxiety medications refilled. So like, okay, you know, here's my script. I need a new script. And they said, hey, we can't fill your script right now, but if you go through this group visit, which is available on insurance, like you can come to this stress group visit, you know, then afterwards we can refill your meds if you still want to do it. And she went ballistic, like screaming at everyone, how dare you hold back my meds from me? Like, you know, screaming at the people on the front desk, screaming at the nurse, screaming at the whole clinic. And then anyway, she goes to the group because she's like, okay, whatever, I'll go to the group. Within 5 minutes is like bawling her eyes out because guess what? Everyone in the group is just like her. She never met anyone like her, right? No one in her immediate family or in her circle that she'd ever opened up with is having the same issues. She hears everyone go around the circle and share what they're dealing with, is bawling, comes out, apologizes to everyone. I'm so sorry. Next time brings her sister along to the group and is now like huge advocate for the group. And that was just one example of where like people think they want the meds, but people really want community and want to be heard. And they want to like feel that they're, you know, not, you know, in many of these issues and probably a lot of people listening to this, like when you had your issues, like you probably felt like no one else had this, like I'm having a unique life experience. Everyone else is at the pub eating, you know, eating pizza and drinking beer. And if I do that, I just like, you know, my life collapses and I can't do it. And no one really understands what it's like to be like me. Well, guess what? In these chronic disease reversal clinics, whatever you want to call them, functional medicine, integrated medicine, naturopathic medicine, like there are people who are like that. And if you can create these groups and start to facilitate these kind of groups and facilitate them in a way that it's mutually empowering, right? We don't want to sit around and say how much our life sucks. We want to really think about what are our goals here? What do we think we're capable of? And there's one piece in this group thing, Alex, that is absolutely critical for anyone who's dealing with a chronic disease. And it speaks to exactly this point, is that the most important, like a lot of times the doctor is someone who doesn't resonate with the patient because the doctor doesn't know what it's like to have this thing. And the doctor looks felt and healthy, right? And is telling you about life, but he's like, do you really know what it's like to have like ME or MS? Like, you don't know. And ultimately in this group, if you can pair people who are just getting started with people who have made some progress, the value transfer there is sensational. And this has to be a part of the future of medicine. Like we have to, if you're starting right at the beginning, you have to see someone who's making progress using empowered solutions, right? Stress reduction, sleep improvements, diet changes, exercise, community, detoxification. Like if you see people are going through that process and they can say, look, I was just like you and I started to do this thing and now look here, these are the symptoms that have cleared up for me. That is missing in medicine and that has to be there. And the only way that I've seen to do that is in a group structure.
One of the things that's coming to my mind as you're speaking, I'm thinking of an old friend of mine who spent many years, funny enough, going on retreats with, being in groups with, but he had been clean 25 years of drugs and alcohol. But he used to, I don't know if he still does, but for many years, he used to still go to AA or NA on a weekly or biweekly basis. Not because he was living in any real fear of relapsing after this many years, but he needed that community. There was something about that group of people. There were particular groups that he chose to go to because they had certain kind of supportive, positive vibes. Perhaps more people that have been on the recovery journey for many more years. But there was something about that plugging in and that community that was just a necessary part of keeping his life steady and stable. And it sort of strikes me that it's not just that we need community in our moments of great crisis. There's also something about community of preventing and maintaining and supporting.
I mean, absolutely. And I'll just share my own experience here, you know, to be vulnerable with your people, to, you know, to share is that like, I don't consider myself really like addicted to anything, or I don't really have any health issues, but I, you know, what I started to find, like I'm surrounded by women, right? I have a wife, I have a daughter, I have like my two mother-in-laws and my wife's sister, like all of these
that
people.
Sounds are like my life.
Yeah. And so that, so when I moved to Sacramento to, you know, because the whole family was here 2 years ago, like I needed to find, you know, I needed to find a group of emotionally mature men to process things with, which I had had, you know, I had had friends who I could do that, but I wanted to be like in person with people. And so, you know, I joined a group called the Mankind Project, and locally here, and we meet, you know, every week. We have our men's group, and that men's group has been the most transformative thing in my life. Like in the last 6 months, it's been a change, and it's the biggest thing for me. And I would say, you know, this is just huge, is that it's accountability, right? It's accountability to one's word. And I just feel like that piece, like, when I start to see, and with all the things that I'm creating in the world, you know, and ultimately what I've started to see is that, you know, do people need a doctor or do they just need accountability, right? Everyone has this huge list of stuff that is bad for them that they do, that they know they do, right? And oftentimes when you go to a functional medicine doctor or some new doctor who, you know, they'll tell you like, oh yeah, all that stuff's bad. And by the way, here's 10 other things that are bad that you didn't know about. And so I think that kind of puts people into this inaction where they're just like, oh my God, I've been a bad boy. Like I'm doing all of this stuff wrong. There's no way I'm going to get better. Oh, I'm just going to like throw it all away. And ultimately, you know, my business partner, Gabe Hoffman, you know, this was 10 years of us working together and seeing that because he was a coach. And he was like, look, the first thing we have to do with patients before any new protocol is deal with this list, right? And get people into some sort of accountability to the person that they want to be. And that could happen through a professional relationship, one-on-one. It can happen through a group. And for me, I found it through a group. So this group is free. Like I pay $2 a week as a gift because we, you know, sit in this church and we give money to the church. But basically, it's free. It doesn't cost me anything to do it. I'm with this group of men who, you know, are, I would say, very like emotionally mature, like have dealt with a lot of stuff in their life and are dealing with it. And you know, through the Mankind Project, a lot of times what comes up is adverse childhood events. And not even like, you know, a whole range of events. Like it's not just things that are like obviously traumatic, like child abuse. You know, so you know, I've seen so many men go through processes to discover that something like quite simple and quite like meaningless, you know, happened to them when they were five, and it's driven all sorts of behavior over the last few days, last few years. And I could see it for myself. Like my destructive behaviors were coming as a result of, you know, little things that had happened in my childhood that were causing me to do certain things. And, you know, through that process, I've had an opportunity to think about emotional maturity, to think about, you know, what is my shadow and what am I like, what is my brain going towards when I'm not conscious of it, and really like unpack and get into that stuff. And I would say, as far as like my resilience now as a human, like I wasn't ill before, but I would say that my resilience, my ability to withstand, you know, threats and pressures and things that come on has transformed dramatically in 6 months, and it was free. And ultimately that process, like I only started being in that process after I'd already written the book. Because I was like, oh my God, if I've written this book and I don't have this, like,
I better go and experience this thing that I'm writing.
I better go and
about.
Like do it. And you know, and it just reinforced everything that I thought. And so that was really like a moment for me where I was like, okay, this is, you know, this is where, you know, where we need to be as an organization, as a collective, and as humanity, is like building this internal resilience. And I would recommend that anyone who's listening needs to find some sort of community to be able to really be honest about their life experience and to be able to get support from people, not just any people, but people who have been through what they've been through and come out the other side.
I really appreciate you sharing that. I think it's a very powerful example of the power of group. And it also makes me think, though, and it sort of relates back to something that you said earlier, that not all groups are equal, that many people have had negative and destructive experiences in groups. And I think about back in the early days of Optimum Health Clinic, I used to go and talk to a lot of ME chronic fatigue groups. And some of those groups, the glue of the group was complaining about how bad their situation was and how no one was supporting them. And other groups, the glue was, we want to find the most inspirational people to come and talk to us and talk about what we can do proactively to change. And there was a great divide and difference between some of those groups. There's something about that what brings that group of people, like the shared intention that yes. brings that group of people together, is also very important.
Absolutely. I think you've hit the nail on the head there. Like, is the group mutually disempowering or is the group mutually empowering? I mean, I think that's basically the difference right there. And ultimately, whatever issue you have, I mean, this couldn't be more clear during COVID, is that, you know, there's a lot of people who are kind of sitting around and waiting for a vaccine. And ultimately, you know, you can see that, okay, like there's, you know, that if you look at the mortality data and you see like who dies and who gets infected, right, there's such a range of experience of the same microbe. And ultimately, like you can change the way that you would experience that microbe when it comes into contact by how proactive you are with healthy behaviors. And ultimately you see that more than 80% of people, they can produce antibodies and they had the virus. They didn't even know they had it. Like it just, you know, they had no symptoms at all. So symptoms that were so mild, they never knew. And obviously some people die and some people, you know, have a major infection or otherwise. And this is basically like, what is your immune resilience? Right. And so I think one of the things that we're all understanding is this idea of resilience. And it's funny, you know, we come up with a word of the year for every year. We set it in the last quarter of the year before. 2020, our year before any of this went down, it was the year of resilience, because we realized like this has to be a concept that we're going to have to understand, which is like, how do we measure health independent from disease? Like I shared with you earlier, my resilience has gone up, but I don't have, like, my disease markers probably haven't changed that much. I mean, they were in good line before and then better, but my resilience is way higher. And so what I think we're going to start to see over this decade is really a shift towards resilience, because in the aftermath of COVID, we're going to see, okay, what populations were resilient, what weren't. And I think that's just a super interesting conversation. And ultimately, to go back to your group point, like you want to find yourself in a mutually empowering group. And how would you know whether your group is empowering or disempowering? One, the first thing that what I've heard from all walks of life, like what are the most successful groups? In the first meeting, when the group connects, everyone has to share why they're there. What is their purpose for being there? And what are their goals? What are their health goals? And ultimately hearing 10 other people share with them that they've got this crazy life situation and they want to overcome it and they're going to get themselves better. Like that is the context for everything that happens moving forward. And ultimately, like, you know, I'm in the business now, like after obviously, you know, I expected at this moment in my life right now, Alex, if you'd asked me at the beginning of the year when the book had just come out, like we had half a dozen big hospital systems in America and also in the NHS in the UK groups that were going to start doing functional medicine group visits like at reasonable scale. So I was like, okay, I'll just be selling hospitals and organizations on doing this. And obviously COVID hit. And so now, you know, we've seen a lot of people, now we're in the business of, okay, let's see what we can do online. How can we facilitate, you know, virtual group visits? And we're already starting to see not just uptake of the idea, but actually almost like a sort of a level of beyond resilience, like anti-fragility, where people are coming up with innovations that you never would have thought of before this moment to be able to bring groups together and to be able to do things that have been kind of like frustrating about the functional medicine experience, you know, and making it more accessible, more affordable, and more available to more people. Because ultimately what we need is more resilient individuals, more resilient families, more resilient communities, more resilient like nations, and a more resilient humanity for whatever threats, you know, come our way in the future.
And I think that's a good point to explore as well around the power of online communities, because one of the challenges is for groups to really work, people need to feel that they're with people that are like them. And if people are going through, either if they live, you know, in not particularly densely populated areas, there's not so much likelihood of their near geographical location of finding people with the same experience. Or indeed, if someone's going through, for example, a particular type of trauma, or they've come from a particular type of background, that online communities can mean that we can really find that tribe sometimes in a way that we wouldn't be able to in our geographical location. And also when people are chronically ill, they're not always as mobile as they would otherwise have been. So maybe say a little bit about what you've discovered. I know you've been doing things online for many years, but particularly in some of the recent months as well, the potential of connecting people that way.
Well, let me give you one example of where I've seen maybe that online groups could be more effective, right? So I can see into your house right now and you can see into a bit of mine, right? And ultimately, like when we go to the doctor's office, the doctor has no insight into what's going on in your house, right? They don't know. You could be lying to them. And a lot of patients do lie to their doctors, right? A lot. That happens a lot. Do you smoke? Are you smoking? No, I don't smoke. How much do you drink? You know, one or two. Like, you know, that is happening in doctor's offices, right? Let's just see that. So that is happening in doctor's offices and it has forever, and it's not helping doctors do good work, right? Because they don't get it. So now imagine like, so, and then you can imagine like a group visit in a doctor's office too, that can still be happening. But then, you know, we've started running this group called the Immune Collaborative at Fine Functional, which is basically like a 12-week training in how to make yourself hard to kill, right? how do you get yourself?
It's a great strap line.
Yeah. How do you put yourself to a point where you maximize your resilience? You have to do fundamentals, right? You have to learn to do the fundamentals of health. And the group is an amazing container for that, right? The group is just a really great container for that. But, you know, the interesting piece is, you know, why don't we just have everyone take their phone or their laptop that they're doing their thing with and let's go to the fridge. Let's see what's in there, right? Let's go to the kitchen and see. And if you're telling me that you don't drink and I see like all the, you know, booze lined up, and if like you're telling me that you're eating lots of vegetables and there's no vegetables in your freezer and your fridge, that gives, you know, we're getting real. Right? Let's get real about what is your environment, right? It's the environment. We have to change the environment. Like one of the things that I'm on a bit of a mission on right now, Alex, is that people refer to these diseases like type 2 diabetes and autoimmune disease, those kind of things, as lifestyle diseases. I don't think they're lifestyle diseases. Like my interpretation is these are environmental diseases that some people can't afford to escape. Right. You know, if you live in a food desert, right, it's not really it's not a lifestyle choice. That's an effect that your environment has been created to create disease. And you just can't afford to escape it. Like, you know, you have to eat at McDonald's because there's no, it would be very difficult for you by yourself to escape that thing. And so, you know, ultimately, there are things that all of us can do individually and especially in community to be able to transform it. But having a view into your house and seeing like what is the actual environment that you live in has been so valuable to be able to see. And people realize it. Like they start to realize, okay, yeah, look, I can see that I'm not setting myself up for success in the way that I'm eating and doing these kind of things. And we've had so many breakthrough moments, Alex, where people have realized like the reason why it's hard for them to be healthy is because they are living in an unhealthy environment. And ultimately, like when that is rephrased and when we do things in kind of a trauma infused way and a poverty infused way, you know, informed way, we can now see, okay, what are the things that you could do to actually, you know, change and actually getting into people's homes has been an amazing thing. So in that way, we said actually we have some super innovation and we have some anti-fragility, and maybe a virtual group visit is more valuable than an in-person group visit.
One of the things that I've also observed doing a lot of work for many years with people in online groups is that somehow when people travel somewhere and they have to leave their home and go on public transport or drive on a motorway, they kind of armor up and layer up their defenses in that process of coming out into the world. And when people can stay in the kind of safety and comfort of their home environment, in a strange way, it's although there's less kind of physical holding in the room of being in a room, there's also tends to be less layers of defense. That kind of speaks to what you were saying about that kind of environment, that somehow people are able to relax and be more vulnerable sometimes in the safety of being in that space.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like to be in your own environment. If we look at psychiatry, right, and how psychiatry's changed. Like at the beginning, psychiatry is like a mental hospital that you get sent to, right? And then psychiatry gets done in regular hospitals. And then psychiatry gets done in comfortable rooms outside of hospitals that you go to. And now psychiatry is happening like in your home on your phone. So that journey of like how mental health can be dealt with, even, you know, psychology to a certain degree. So, you know, we're in a situation here, as a world, like I think this the growth of telemedicine as an example to me, I think is a very great trend, because like I think most people's experience with going to the doctor is super annoying, where like they don't feel like their time is being valued because they're having to take a whole morning off for a 7-minute appointment with their pediatrician. The kids are going haywire, and like think about your normal experience of going to a doctor. Now it's like, okay, it's my time for my telemedicine appointment, here I am and we're talking and I'm getting value straight away, and I didn't have to travel anywhere or drive anywhere. And so there are elements of what's happening now that I think will not go away. And, you know, ultimately, I've been on a mission for 15 years to try and work out how to flatten the healthcare costs, right? We're all talking about flattening the curve. What about the curve of healthcare costs? And when I was at university in England, you know, the costs in the NHS were going like this, and the costs in America were going like this, and no one had a plan. It was like, what's the plan here? Like that, you know, it's just like, we need more budget. And ultimately what we need, Alex, is we need many, many more people to just be well and kind of like healthy and, you know, and to do that. And the biggest asset that we have, right, the biggest resource, the only inexhaustible resource that we have is peer-to-peer, right? And that we're using that as a tiny fraction of its potential. And so the healthcare system that I envision, you know, for the transformation and bringing down costs is really taking advantage of peer-to-peer. And at the moment, there has to be virtual groups. But in the future, you know, you don't have to look far from where you live in Froome, you know, to see the transformational potential of community, where in Froome, you know, they literally went through a process of finding every group that existed in the community, putting them all on a website, and, you know, setting up structures where every single person who was lonely was put into one of these groups. And, you know, use of emergency room went down 20%. They saved £2 million in the first year. Like, is an incredible model for what's available when we just take advantage of this peer-to-peer community. And so that's why I'm super excited for it. I'm not going to stop talking about it. I'm not going to start doing experiments to see what we can do. And I'm very excited by, you know, by the future of medicine, because I feel like this is kind of a jolt, right? It jolted everyone to think, like, could we all work together to do something differently? And we did. Like, everyone stayed at home pretty much for months. And so now the new jolt is, if we know that mortality is 10 times higher with, you know, metabolic disturbance from COVID, and we know that it's these chronic disease costs that are driving everything up and down, what could we do about it? And the biggest thing that we can do is start to get people in groups and support each other to get that, get and keep themselves well.
And that, I think that's a very inspiring and powerful call to action in terms of the value of this. And I think I'm thinking about individuals watching this that are, that can feel they need that group support. They can feel that, okay, that's a missing piece. They feel alone. They don't feel they're held and supported in their trauma recovery journey, their health recovery journey. But what comes up for them is a sense of fear. You had mentioned earlier about people that have had often negative and difficult experiences in groups. And there are different paths and ways people can find those groups. Maybe we'll touch on that in a moment at the end. But how do people get past that fear? Like, how do they get themselves to take that step to reach out and to see, you know, they may have to try a few things, but to take that initial step to start moving towards having support and having community?
Well, so look, this has been a question that I've been thinking about for a long time, Alex, because we, you know, you've said there, like, that inner feeling is like, I can't do it. And then, like, you know, then it's like, oh, well, if I just do it, it's better. And so ultimately I was like, what would it be like if everyone in the world could have a best friend that had already reversed a chronic disease, right? That had made that first step. And ultimately that's what led to Find Functional, where I just realized that everyone needed a health coach, but everyone kind of needed like a kind of an advocate for them, like someone who would like advocate for them to get the most out of the system and, you know, have the best, you know, best things in mind. And ultimately what I started to realize was that, you know, what if we could just give everyone an opportunity to have a real conversation with someone who wants to see them get better and has already gone through that process themselves, and to introduce that sort of peer-to-peer value. And that's at Find Functional, what we created is a way that everyone, for the less than a cost of a copay, so for $49, anyone can come in and to, you know, have a conversation with someone who is trained as a health coach. Some of them are nurses, some of them have other, you know, certifications, but ultimately that they can have a conversation with them. They can get into some of this stuff, like, how are you doing with actually executing everything that's on your plate? You know, how are you doing with the like fundamentals of health creation? And then guide people towards, you know, towards what is the lowest cost, most impact things that I can do to start on that journey. And a lot of it is really helping people to feel comfortable to take that first step, because ultimately if we can get everyone into one of these self-supporting groups, I know just from the data that we see in the sort of minutia, I know that at a population level this can have a tremendous impact, and that's what I'm committed to.
That's very cool. That's very cool. James, people that want to find out more about what you just mentioned and you and your work, what's the best way to do that?
So for anyone who's watching this, if you use the code trauma at checkout, you'll get $50 off, you know, your entry into Find Functional. And ultimately, you know, for $49, you can take that first step on the journey. It's findfunctional.com. You know, that's something that we put together to make it super easy, people. And through that portal, we can introduce you to a virtual group visit. We'll introduce you to a local functional medicine doctor, if that makes sense. Our goal is to try and get everyone as well as possible for the minimum possible cost. That's our like North Star. And what we've seen in a lot of cases, it's not going to the doctor first because the doctor's way more expensive than other providers. But, you know, for most people, you can read my book. The Community Cure is available kind of anywhere books are sold. And watch this space. I started a podcast called The Rogue Health Economist, where I'm talking into a lot of these ideas. You'll see, if you watch the show, you'll see a very familiar background. But we're just getting started. Like for me, Alex, the last 10 years, like the last decade was really about trying to get more doctors to do functional medicine. And now this decade is really about mainstream adoption of these ideas and trying to get as many people engaged with them as possible. And so I'm keeping myself busy.
That's awesome. James, thank you so much. All right. I really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thanks, Alex.